Friends, it's time that we, as God's people, grow up.
It's time for The Line of Fire with your host, activist, author, international speaker, and theologian, Dr. Michael Brown, your voice of moral, cultural, and spiritual revolution. Michael Brown is the director of the Coalition of Conscience and president of Fire School of Ministry. Get into The Line of Fire now by calling 866-34-TRUTH. That's 866-34-TRUTH. Here again is Dr. Michael Brown.
I hope that you are ready for some spiritual meat. Yes, spiritually speaking, for some solid food and not just nursing milk. I hope you're ready to go a little deeper in God, in the Word with me today. This is Michael Brown. Welcome to The Line of Fire. Absolutely delighted to spend this time together with you. If you have a question for me of any kind, relating to any subject at all relevant to our broadcast, I'm opening the phone lines now. 866-34-TRUTH. That's 866-348-7884. Any question of any kind. And once again, although it does seem somewhat futile, once again, I want to invite the critics to call. And if you freely damn me to hell for various reasons on the internet, well, then by all means, have the courtesy, if not the courage, to call in and share that with our listeners. And allow me to respond to you. Perhaps it'll be a teachable moment. 866-34-TRUTH. Friends, I continue to be grieved over the shallow state of so much of the church in America, other countries as well, but in America where I live. I continue to be grieved by the immaturity. I continue to be grieved by the divisiveness. And we have, on the one hand, all kinds of serious theological error and problems. We have, on the other hand, all kinds of problems when it comes to walking in love and grace. We have, on the one hand, moral issues. On the other hand, creedal issues. And if I asked you, which is worse, lack of love or theological error? Well they're both bad. They're both dangerous. On the one hand, if we deny fundamentals of the faith, if we don't believe that Jesus died for our sins and rose from the dead, for example, then we have no eternal life in us. On the other hand, we can be doctrinally correct. We can hold to doctrinal truth and not walk in love, not love one another. And now we are denying the very faith that we profess. When you read 1 John, John there is dealing with theological errors and wrong beliefs. For example, people denying that Jesus has come in the flesh. But then he keeps talking about walking in love and the sin of hating our brothers. If we don't follow God's commandments, we walk in darkness. So it is both and. Both are important. And there's a quote from Vance Havner, who was a well-known Baptist evangelist a couple generations back. And he said this. I've shared it before. I want to read it again. For those watching, I don't have the quote to put up for you. But Vance Havner said this: one may be as straight as a gun barrel theologically and as empty as a gun barrel spiritually. In fact, it may be that in their very opposition to evil men and false teachers, speaking of the church in Ephesus that Jesus rebuked for leaving its first love, he said, it may be that in their very opposition to evil men and false teachers, these Ephesian saints had left their first love. So often it turns out that fundamental and orthodox Christians become so severe in condemning false doctrine, gnashing their teeth at every sniff of heresy, that they end up without love. One may do a right thing in a wrong way. The same Paul who wrote, though we or an angel from heaven preach any other gospel, let him be accursed, also wrote the love chapter to the Corinthians. Unless we can get that combination, we shall be theological hawkshawks and doctrinal detectives, religious bloodhounds looking for heretics, but with hot heads and cold hearts. Moreover, Ephesus, Revelation 2, 1 through 7, proves that religious activity without love calls for repentance. I've wondered what would be left nowadays if we eliminated from our church work all that is not the spontaneous expression of our heart's love for Christ. Wow. Serious words to think about. And I was on the phone the other day with my friend James Robison. In fact, I may write an article about this later today, time permitting. And he just broke down sobbing. And he was talking to me about God's redemptive heart. And he literally broke down sobbing as he was talking to me. And in moments like that, I just try to drink in everything. I listen to the words. I try to record them in my mind. And I try to drink in what's being shared with me. Because he said, how did God feel? How did Jesus feel when Peter betrayed him? You think of that. What an absolutely horrific thing for Peter. I mean, Jesus knew it was coming, but Jesus is also fully human, right? And God's heart beats over these things. How did the Lord feel when Peter betrayed him? And yet, less than 2 months later, Peter is the keynote speaker as the Holy Spirit's poured out at Shavuot, Pentecost. And James asked out loud as he was talking with me and sharing his heart, why is Solomon still in the Bible? Why is David still in the Bible? Because I tell you, in my mind, David, no matter how great he was, no matter how godly he was, no matter what Psalms he wrote and all of this, what he did just with Uriah and Bathsheba, committing adultery with Bathsheba, getting her pregnant, then finding out when she's pregnant, now he's got to do something, kills her husband, all right, and does so as the king who has the power to do this. That would be enough to think, okay, you're forgiven, but you kind of lose your place here. Well, no, that was not God's heart. And Solomon, with all the sins he committed, all the idolatry, and the hundreds of wives and concubines, and all of that, we still read the Proverbs of Solomon. And it's not just we learn from the mistakes of his life, but we still glean from his words of wisdom. God is so much more redemptive in thought than we are. Listen, I've got a decent background in terms of biblical study and exegesis and things like that. Meaning, if I hold to a doctrinal point, I'll gladly debate you on it. Have a friendly debate. In other words, anything that I hold to that's very important in my belief, that's something I really feel strongly about, I'll debate anybody on it. Any expert from any field that relates to that, I'll gladly debate it, all right? It was I feel very confident about it, and I feel very confident in areas I differ with that I could dismantle them theologically, or I could at least raise strong scriptural reasons why I don't agree with you, all right? So in that sense, I'm not a theological or especially an exegetical lightweight. I think I've got a decent working knowledge of scripture and of the languages, etc. But I'm not out day and night trying to rip down everyone that I differ with and expose their here and here and here and here and here and here and here. And if I felt it was my calling to be doing that, to really be policing error and looking for it and the purpose of this broadcast, and some may be called to this. I'm not saying this in a demeaning way. I'm not at all. All right. But hear me out. If I felt called by the Lord that every week, every show, I'd be saying, hey, here's the latest false teaching I saw on TV. Here's the latest error in a best-selling book. Here's the latest theological deviation. And that's what we did on the show. And that was the primary focus of the show, what God called us to do. My goal would still be redemptive. In other words, I'd be reaching out to the people that I'm calling out and exposing. Our team would be reaching out first saying, hey, Dr. Brown really differs with you, and he's going to be doing a show about this next week. Would you be willing to speak with him privately? And then even after the show, my goal would not be to smash the person down. My goal would be to get them to change and preach truth. And often what we see is a non-redemptive heart. And you think of how patient and kind and long-suffering the Lord is towards us. It doesn't mean that we tolerate error. It doesn't mean that we wink at doctrinal deviance. Doesn't mean that we look the other way when there's sin going on. No, quite the contrary. If you love your neighbor, you rebuke your neighbor, all right? Sometimes we do it privately. Sometimes it has to be done publicly. Sometimes there's an appeal. Sometimes there's much prayer before speaking. There are many different ways things unfold. And by the way, if there was someone on TV, some Christian leader on TV last night, made some statement that was totally off the wall, and there's massive confusion about this, and I have no access to this person, right? I have no problem addressing it the next day on the air. In other words, okay, so-and-so said this on national TV last night. Dr. Brown, what do you think of that? Oh, here's where I differ, and here's where I feel this is dangerous. I have no problem doing that whatsoever. But still, I'm going to see if there's a way I can reach out to that person. Maybe I can bring them back. Maybe I can get them to think again. Maybe they didn't realize the weight of the error of which they spoke. God's heart is incredibly redemptive. And I know in all of our lives, just think of this. He's looking down right now in all of our lives when we're basically like a circular firing squad and shooting at each other, okay? I mean, on a daily basis, I get damned to hell on the internet for the exact opposite things. Only one of them can be true, right? And often both are false. But someone will damn me to hell because I'm not a Catholic, all right? I'm not a Catholic. It's true. And then someone else will damn me to hell because I'm a supporter of Pope Francis and actively working in the ecumenical movement. Well, that's not true. Both are false, but they're mutually contradictory. They cancel each other out. I'll get damned to hell because I'm a Judaizer forcing Torah observance on everyone, which is false. And then I'll get damned to hell because I say that Torah has no meaning in the life of a Jewish believer today, which is also false, all right? But mutually contradictory statements, and people are so passionate about this, you think, how does the Lord feel in all of this? And he's working in this one and in this one.
Well, those people say they're obviously not saved.
Well, it's so easy to damn each other. And by the time we're done, we're the only one left standing. Oh, but someone else has already damned us. So let me repeat. It's important that we call out error. It's important that we address error. It's something I've sought to do over the years. In fact, the Lord's had to pull me back from my zeal of doing it just in my own initiative as opposed to being led by the Lord and being able to really focus things scripturally and do it in depth and in a proper way, all right? So there is absolutely a place for that. But do we walk in love? Do we love our brothers? Do we love our sisters? Do we love the one that we feel is strayed and gone off the path? Do we pray for them? Do we weep for them? Do we appeal to them? Or do we just sit back, look at this error and that error, so stupid, so bad? And do we have God's heart? How about his heart and his mind? How about grace and truth? How about the Spirit and the Word? It's time we grow up. Change the world.
Change the world. It's fire we want, for fire we It's the Line of Fire with your host, Dr. Michael Brown. Get into the Line of Fire now by calling 866-34-TRUTH. Here again is Dr. Michael Brown.
Thanks, friends, for joining us on the Line of Fire, 866-348-7884. That's the number to call, and I'll be taking calls on a wide range of subjects today as we talk about maturing, going deeper in the Lord, having God's heart and God's mind. Yeah, there's some people just, hey, we love everybody, we walk in love, and they have no concern for truth. They have no concern for doctrine. They have no concern for the Word. And they're in danger also because they believe anything. And you have others that are so skeptical, they believe almost nothing. And friends, I want you to know that behind the scenes, we reach out constantly. For example, we did a show about Noahide laws. And I was hearing things that I thought were absolutely outrageous. People saying, is it true that Noahide laws are going to be taught worldwide and the Christians are going to be beheaded for idolatry? That's the craziest thing I ever heard. I wasn't trying to offend anyone intentionally or anything like that. Then find out, well, there's a Messianic Jewish couple and they've been sharing certain things and Stephen Danoon and his wife, and they've got a lot of information on this, etc. I wasn't mocking them or anything, didn't know who they were or what they had taught. Then it turns out he wrote to us, apologizing for what some folks who follow them had said to us, etc. It was gracious and opened the door to interact. We've written back and saying, okay, let's interact once I found out who they were. So we've been trying to do that, and just schedule hasn't worked on their end yet, but I've been trying to do that. with Rick Wiles, with stuff that's blatantly anti-Semitic that he and his team are putting out on True News. I'll go on your show. No. You come on my show. No. Let's do a formal debate. No. E. Michael Jones, upset with me for saying that his teaching is anti-Semitic, what he holds to is anti-Semitic. So, well, let's have a formal moderated debate then. You explain why it's not anti-Semitic, and I'll argue why it is anti-Semitic. Let's do that. No open door to do that yet. You need to contact so-and-so. And I'm not going to mention names because it's going to be negative what I say. All right? You need to contact so-and-so. Well, we reached out to so-and-so. Come on my show. No. You talk to this one instead. So we keep trying to do that. All right? We keep trying to do that. Why don't you respond to this critic or that critic? First, if I did that, as I've said repeatedly, you'd never hear from me again for the rest of your lives, the rest of my life, because all I'd be doing is responding to the endless chain of critics. But for the most part, I don't even know who they are. They don't contact us. Mike Brown, we have an issue with you. We want to take issue with it. We think you're wrong on this. They didn't contact me. All right? So all that to say, there's nothing redemptive in the way things are done. There is nothing that is seeking to bring deeper unity in the body or to correct error in a constructive way. You know, I have some real differences with Pastor Andy Stanley in his book, Irresistible. Very, very strong differences. And we've texted each other back and forth and very candidly. And I said to him, hey, listen, man. I said, I'm going to say something really strong to you. I hope it doesn't mess up our relationship. He said, how is a text going to mess up a relationship? In other words, let's discuss our differences. But you know what bothers him? When some major Christian magazine or organization does a major critique of something he said, but they never contact him. Like, contact me and we'll talk about it. I'll do an interview for you, etc. You may still have the differences. I still have differences with him, but I respect his openness. I respect his accessibility. I respect his willingness to dialogue. So as long as I can do that, we'll do it. Now, I wanted to spend a few hours with him face to face, and he offered a slot here. It didn't work for me, and he was willing to do it. We just couldn't work out the time. So I said, tell you what, as I have the time, I'll finish going through your Irresistible book, and I'll write a major critique of it, and I'll post it. And then we can use that for further discussion. Yeah, great with him. Okay, so trying to be redemptive in all of this, because that's God's heart. And let me ask you something. Did you ever have a season in your life when you weren't right with God? Maybe as a believer that you were not right with God. Did you have a season in your life where you strayed off into some kind of error as a believer and you look back at it now and recognize it? How did God deal with you during that? How did he deal with you? Was he redemptive in his dealings with you, or just like, forget him, forget her, puh, yikes. Thought they were decent people, but forget them. Is that what he did? Or did he publicly mock you? Or did he convict you of sin and lovingly draw you back and lovingly draw you back? We want to follow his lead. We want to walk in greater maturity, share the redemptive heart of God. Isn't that something we can all resonate with? 866-34-TRUTH. Let us switch subjects. This may be off topic, it may be on topic, but we're going to open the phone lines, and I'll share some more. I'm going to get into the Word with you on this as well. Let's start in Tampa, Florida. Stephen, welcome to the Line of Fire.
Hey, Dr. Brian, how you doing?
Doing well. You know, I was in Tampa longer than I planned to be. I flew in there on Saturday, spoke in Brandon, Florida, Sunday morning, a couple of services, got to the airport mid-afternoon in Tampa, and there was bad weather. We sat on the plane 4 or 5 hours. So I was just in Tampa longer than I planned to be, but all good. What's up, Stephen?
Good. Yeah, it's still storming here every day for like a week now. But I wanted to get your dive into a little bit for me. I was trying to minister to a family friend. I was in D.C. this weekend, and I was still listening to you, and I started to minister to this wife of a family friend. She was raised up Catholic, and she was kind of under the opinion of Jesus is here to save the Jews, and she only likes the gospel. She doesn't really believe in the story of Paul or really the Holy Spirit. She's like, it's up for interpretation. Well, I went to John chapter 10, and I wanted you to talk about this, and Jesus said himself, I think it's in verse 16, where he says, talking about the Good Shepherd, and there's sheep that are not in my flock that I have to bring them in, and they will know my voice and love. So, and I'm assuming by interpreting this passage, and I could be wrong, that Jesus is talking to the sheep that know my voice and love me are the believers.
Yes.
But I also want to get the sheep that are outside the gate, and those are the unbelievers. And those are
it's not so much, yeah, right. It's not just believer, unbeliever. It's more Jew and Gentile there. In other words, that's the context, that the sheep that have been part of his community, the believers up to now, they are Jews, but there are other sheep who are outside of that. He's got to bring them in. Those are Gentiles. And here's the thing. That's what's supposed to happen in the Messianic age. What I'd encourage you to do, Stephen, is take a look in Romans 15 and look up, any Bible translation should have footnotes, and they'll tell you where the citations are from. Look up Romans 15 and look at the verses that Paul quotes from Deuteronomy and elsewhere. And he quotes them about Jew and Gentile coming together as one in the Messiah. And this is what the prophet said was going to happen in passages like Isaiah 60 and 62 and things like that. Jew and Gentile joined together. The end of Isaiah 19 speaks of that with Egypt and Assyria and Israel all coming together. So this is what's happening here, all coming together as one. And the anticipation would be, well, during the fullness of the Messianic era, this will happen. And Paul's saying it's happened now, Jew and Gentile together. So my point is this, Stephen, that if they like the Gospels are saying what Paul is saying. And Paul is getting this from where? From the Hebrew Bible. So the Hebrew Bible itself is telling us these things will happen when Messiah comes. If the Gospels are real, then it must also include Gentiles, and it must also include the wider church. And that's what Paul had with great insight. Romans 15, 16 as well towards the end, but especially Romans 15, you'll see Paul opens that up. Again, this was something that was understood in the Messianic age, that the Jews would be like a priestly nation in the Messianic age, and the Gentiles would honor them and serve God, serve the God of Israel. And Paul's saying, no, it's already happened, but it's happened in a way where Jew and Gentile and Jesus are now equal. So if you reject what Paul is saying, you also reject what Jesus was saying. You also reject what the Hebrew prophets were saying. Hopefully that's an angle whereby you can help reach these folks. Hey, thank you, sir, for the call. Okay, special announcement, and then we'll go to more of your calls and the scriptures. My book, Jezebel's War with America, perhaps the most intense book I've written out of 35 books so far, it comes out August 6th. That's less than 2 months away, a little over 6 weeks away. What we do with every new book, and this is coming out in the beautiful hardcover, about 250 pages, what we do with every new book is we offer a signed numbered copy, like a collector's edition, all right? What we wanted to do this time was do something we've never done before. When you order from our website, so go to askdrbrown.org, you'll find it right on the homepage. Not only will you get a signed numbered copy, right? So as soon as we get them in, which is normally ahead of the release date, I'll sign it to you and it'll be numbered already. So you may get book number one or book number 30 or book number 100, okay? So it's a collector's edition. But we'll give you a free download to my 8-session, 12-hour teaching on spiritual warfare. This was something I did many years ago. And once I taught, I thought, this is the best I've taught. It's kind of become like a classic audio series on spiritual warfare because it ties in with this theme of Jezebel. You connect the dots and see the same demonic forces that operated through this woman in biblical days, they are operating big time in America today. Jezebel is being exposed, and that's how we can defeat Jezebel in Jesus' name. So go to our website now, askdrbrown.org. You'll see a banner right on the homepage. When you order from us, you'll get the signed numbered copy as soon as we get the books in, which should be even before the release date, and a free download to my 12-hour teaching series on spiritual warfare. So you'll save some money in the process. You'll be blessed. Get extra copies if you want them for gifts for others. We'll be right back.
It's The Line of Fire with your host, Dr. Michael Brown, your voice of moral, cultural, and spiritual revolution. Here again is Dr. Michael Brown.
Yes, yes, yes. Yes, we need a gospel-based moral and cultural revolution. Teaching every night this week at Southern Evangelical Seminary in Charlotte, and then all day Saturday, teaching on LGBT activism, the impact on society, what the church's answer must be. All the more do we see that we are in the midst of a cultural revolution going in the wrong direction, the aftermath of the sexual revolution, the aftermath of throwing out biblical conservative values, the ongoing attack on things that are sacred and precious from so many different angles. There's a massive cultural revolution taking place in front of our eyes. The gospel brings a more radical cultural revolution, but in the right direction. How? By changing people from the inside out. And as we are changed from the inside out, we go in God's grace and power and authority and change others through the gospel, not through taking over, not through intimidation, but through the gospel. 866-34-TRUTH. If you have a question of any kind or something you want to raise, you've heard a concern, there's something bothering you, you'd like to tell me what, by all means, give me a call. Please, I would love to speak with you, and I'm not offended by all kinds of crazy accusations and questions. Trust me, it comes with the turf. 866-34-TRUTH. Before I go to the phones, I want to look at the scriptures with you. Before I do that, a little poll I just started on Twitter, all right? Just out of curiosity, it's only 2019. We got quite a ways before we get to the 2020 elections. But I did this poll. Did you vote for Donald Trump in 2016? If so, would you do so again 2020? Well, I give four different options in the poll. Yes, I voted for him in 2016. Yes, I voted for him in 2020. Yes, I voted for him in 2016. No, I would not vote for him in 2020. No, I didn't vote for him in 2016. No, I wouldn't vote for him in 2020. No, I didn't vote for him in 2016. Yes, I would vote for him in 2020. So at present, we've got our first 232 votes. I launched it right before the show started. So as I'm looking at the results so far, 67% said yes, they voted for President Trump in 2016, and they would again in 2020. 5% said yes in 2016, no in 2020, all right? So out of those who voted for him, the 72% of my Twitter followers who voted for him, 67% out of that, well, so... Okay, 72% is the total. Now we've got to work that out in terms of what it actually means on the larger scale. But you see that overwhelmingly, those who voted for him said they would again, and a small number said they voted for him, but they wouldn't. Now, I'm not saying this is truth, error, right, wrong, just polling, okay? 11% said they didn't vote for him in 2016, and they won't in 2020. But 17% said they did not vote for him in 2016, but they plan to in 2020. Isn't that interesting? So he lost 5% out of the total, but gained 17%. So just interesting that the great majority of those who voted for him, overwhelming majority, said, yeah, we'd do it again. A small minority of those who voted for him said they wouldn't do it again. But a not insignificant minority who did not vote for him in 2016, said they would in 2020. Was that proof? It doesn't prove anything, just interesting. And we shall see how these things play out. All right, I want to read to you 1 Corinthians chapter 3. 1 Corinthians chapter 3. Let's take a look at what Paul writes. Now remember, he's writing a letter to the Corinthians, these beloved believers in Corinth, who had a lot of error and a lot of zeal. And he says this, and I'll read from the TLV, Tree of Life version. And I, brothers and sisters, could not speak to you as spirit-filled, but as worldly, as infants in Messiah. I gave you milk, not solid food, for you are not yet ready. Indeed, even now, you are not yet ready, for you are still worldly, carnal, fleshly. For since there's jealousy and strife among you, aren't you worldly? Aren't you carnal? And walking in a human way, an earthly way? For when one says, I follow Paul, and another, I follow Apollos, are you not mere humans? Just speak fleshly. What then is Apollos? And what is Paul? Servants through whom you came to trust, and to each as the Lord gave. So servants through whom you came to believe. I planted, Apollos watered, but God gave the increase. So neither the one who plants nor the one who waters is anything, but only God who makes things grow. Now he who plants and he who waters work as one, but each will receive his own reward according to his own labor. For we are God's co-workers, you are God's field, God's building. Why do I read that? Read that to say often we mark ourselves as carnal and immature by our behavior, by our allegiance to one person over another person, rather than having an allegiance to Jesus through people who have blessed us, all right? So you're not in the brown camp or the white camp. Those are actually people, right? You're not in this camp or that camp. You're in the Jesus camp, but this one's been a blessing to you and that one's been a blessing to you. This teacher's been a help to you. This pastor's been a help to you. But the camp that you're in is the Jesus camp. You see, friends, it is so easy for me by nature to write off everybody except for a tiny little group because I find fault with this one, with this one, with this one, with this one. It's so easy for me to do that. And the Lord really corrected that in me many years ago to make me understand I'm part of a big body. I'm part of a big body. And we need one another. And whereas I may have grace to do certain things, boy, there are other things I don't have grace to do. You know, Nancy and I were talking the other day, and she's saying, you know, your average husband could still help out more with this and this and this and this, as opposed to having so little knowledge of just practical household things and so on. I said, yeah, I said, but your average husband doesn't do what I do here and there. You got to take the good with the bad. And we were laughing about it, but that's just the way it is. That you know, and I'm not Albert Einstein. I'm not making this comparison, but Albert Einstein may not have been able to screw a light bulb in. I don't know. He may have been so much of a genius in this way that he couldn't do the other thing. Now, I'm not saying we shouldn't be as practical as we can be, all right? But hey, I think it's brilliant. If my car breaks down and I tell you, oh, it's this, and we just put this part in, do this, and put this fluid in, to me, that's brilliant. That's every bit as brilliant as when you come in my library and you read those books in those languages. Yeah, I think it's amazing you can do that. And then I watch someone else operate in their own field. I'm just talking about in the natural now. You know, and I remember there was a woman we used to call Mother Dear, and she would come in and help in the nursery. If we were having a special event, we're trying to get the wives together with the husbands and all that, and there were a bunch of infants and toddlers, and she would just bring them in. She'd be all smiles. We can handle it. It's like, I'd be totally intimidated with all five infants that have to be changed at certain points and three toddlers, and she'd just be smiling. It's like, that's brilliant to me. That's another type of brilliance. How to know what the kid needs and how to know how to respond, etc. The same way in the body. We have such diversity, and I can so appreciate this one and this one and this one and this one. And yet at the same time, love is going to call us to correct, and love is going to call us to rebuke, and love is going to call us to set right and to discipline. We do what we do in love. Okay, last point, then we go to the phones. The illustration is given in terms of how people are gifted differently in the Lord. That I use this illustration, that a pastor calls his leadership team in and says, men, we do not have a family in our church here. We're not a community. We have churchgoers. We hardly even know each other. So here's what we're going to do. 1 month from Sunday, I'm going to announce it Sunday, 1 month out, we're going to clear out the building as soon as the service is over, and we're going to make it into a giant, we're going to potluck, we're going to make it into like a giant restaurant. We're going to have the tables out and chairs, and we're going to hang out. And we're going to have everybody sit with people they don't know. And we're going to hang out. And then afterwards, we're going to go out in the field. We're going to play games and all this. We just got to spend time together. And one brother on the leadership team's real evangelist, pastor, pastor. That's not right. That's immoral. We have people right next door to our church building that have never heard the gospel. And when we're feasting, they could go to hell. We need to get the whole church on Sunday and go out door to door and evangelize. Another brother, very prophetic. He says, Pastor, I like your idea, but God won't bless you. You know how much sin there is in the camp? You know how much junk there is going on in the camp? How is God going to bless us when there's so much sin in our midst? No way. And then another brother, he's really gifted as a teacher. He goes, Pastor, I love the idea, but would I be able to do a teaching first on the meaning of koinonia and fellowship and draw that out from the Greek so that we could really enrich our time? And on a certain level, everybody has a valid perspective. And then the pastor is the senior leader. He's got to weave it together for the good of the body. But rather than being, I'm in this camp and that camp, let's be in the Jesus camp. And then let's work together for the common good. Otherwise, how's the world ever going to know that we're his disciples? Didn't Jesus say, this is how the world will know that you're my disciples, by the love you have for each other. As the world watches us, even when we take issue with each other, are we doing it in a redemptive way? Are we doing it in a way that manifests love? Are we doing it in a way that grieves over error and wants people to walk in the truth? Are we? 866-34-TRUTH. Let's go to Daniel in New York City. Welcome to the Line of Fire.
Hi, Michael Brown. Dr. Brown, how are you?
Doing well, thanks.
First of all, I want to thank you for just the attitude that I've seen you portray when people attack you. I've seen Phil Johnson and all these different people come after you. And seeing you respond in love and positivity, your video about Michael Brown is dangerous, you know, dangerous for the Lord. I was really appreciative of that. And because of your spirit, I've, most other discernment ministries I've had to stop following and stop recommending because of the way they treat other people. But the way that you treat people has been such a blessing to me, even when you're under attack, that I recommend your ministry to many people here in New York City. So I really thank you for having that humility, because that's really not easy to do.
Well, hey, you are very welcome, sir. Stay right there. I know you had a question. But friends, folks ever mentioned Phil Johnson working with John MacArthur, I believe they're very zealous. They see error. It concerns them. I would say there's a better way, a more redemptive way that we can approach these things. Let's work together just so we can really help others. We'll be right back.
It's The Line of Fire with your host, activist, author, international speaker, and theologian, Dr. Michael Brown. Your voice of moral, cultural, and spiritual revolution. Get into The Line of Fire now by calling 866-34-TRUTH. Here again is Dr. Michael Brown.
Welcome, friends, to The Line of Fire. Just another reminder, if you appreciate what we're doing and want to help us do it more and push back against censorship, go to patreon.com/AskDrBrown. patreon.com/ASKDR Brown. And when you do that, you will be helping us get the word out regardless of censorship and demonetizing and other obstacles. You'll be helping us get a message out, and you'll be blessed with special bonus shows yourself as you do. patreon.com/ASKDR Brown. All right, Daniel, back to you. Again, thank you for the kind words, sir. What's your question?
My question is, I live in Williamsburg, which is a very Hasidic community.
Yes, sir.
And I've gotten to, you know, kind of in a general way, know some of the people that are really nice. On Sabbath, they'll invite me or ask me to come, you know, turn a light off for them, and then they'll give me a drink of water. We'll talk a little bit. Really nice community. And then some of them have asked me, oh, are you Jewish? And I say, well, you know, recently I found out that I have like 6% Jewish on my mother's side, but I'm sure you don't count that. And then they would say, oh, yes, we do. It has to be on the mother's side. And then they'll say, you know, the blessing over me when they're around and stuff. So I've done that a few times. I've been trying to learn some Hebrew now. But my question is, I know in the Bible it seemed that the lineage, the line was always through the father. Mm-hmm. And I was very confused as to why now they make it clear that it's the mother's lineage that they,
right,
you know, that they document. So I was wondering, I tried to do a little bit of a Google search on that to figure it out. I couldn't find much, so I wanted to see if you had any clarity on when that changed and how that developed.
Yes. Now, according to a traditional Jew, in their mind, that's the way it's always been. In other words, they think the traditions they have now reflect the way God always intended it. And they would go back to the days of Ezra and Nehemiah. And in the days of Ezra and Nehemiah, the Jewish people had intermarried with the nations around them, the surrounding nations. And when the men were rebuked and told to divorce their wives, that the men sent off the wives and the children. So based on that, the rabbis deduce that the lineage is traced through the mother in terms of Jewishness, not inheritance, you know, or if you're in the line of the king or something like that, but that Jewishness is traced through the mother. That's why when it was a foreign woman, they pushed her away with the children. Now, there could just be a sociological explanation for that, namely that the mothers are the ones that are going to be caring for the children while the men are out working. So it was just a natural thing that that would happen. The men would not be able to care for the children without the women. But that's a text that they would look to. But when you look in Acts 16, sir, you see that Paul has Timothy circumcised. And he did it because of the Jewish people they were ministering to and the Jewish opposition. His mother was Jewish and his father was Greek. Paul had him circumcised, but there are scholars who say that indicates that there was debate at that time, that there was not clarity at that time, and that's why it had to even be discussed. So as to when the change happened, because you can make a good case biblically, as you mentioned, you could make a good case biblically that the descent is traced through the father. For example, when Solomon had these different wives, was there any indication that those children would not be considered children of Solomon and part of Israel, etc.? So historically, as best as we can understand it, probably in the early centuries of this era is when the official change clearly came. But otherwise, there's no indication, say, if you go back to the days of David and Solomon or go back to the days of Jeremiah, that they thought the way traditional Jews think today, namely that your Jewishness is traced through the mother. My own perspective would be if there's Jewish lineage through the mother or the father and you've been raised with consciousness that you're Jewish, then that would count in terms of Jewishness. But if you're going to immigrate to Israel, then you'd have to show that either your mother or your grandmother were Jewish. If you could document that, you'd get in. Of course, if they find out you're a believer in Jesus, people would try to stop you. But those are realities. Hey, Daniel, thank you for the call. 866-34-TRUTH. Let's jump over to Massachusetts. Ezekiel, thanks for calling the Line of Fire.
Hey, what's up, Dr. Brian? Can you hear me?
If speak up a little better. Are you right going into the phone?
Yeah, I'm in the phone. Can you hear me better now?
Yeah, that's better. Go ahead.
All right, yeah, so I don't understand one thing. I watch you all the time. I read a few of your books. I have mad respect, mad love for you. I love your relationship with you and Dr. John Dwight because, like, I'm Reformed, but I have Pentecostal friends.
All right.
It's just a blessing to see your ministry. But I had a question. You were reading a letter from Justin Peters.
Yeah.
And then you were kind of, like, not defending Kenneth Copeland, but it sounded kind of like you were defending Kenneth Copeland. And I understood some of the statements you said. And I was like, okay, you know, he makes a good point. But then, after that, you went and you described, like, what heresy is. You described, this is what a false teacher looks like. I'm going to call this out a heresy. And
right.
When you said what heresy was like, you 100% described Kenneth Copeland.
Mm-hmm.
And to me, that was very, very disappointing because, to me, it's like it's like you won't call him out. And then when you describe, you say, this is heretical, you perfectly to a T. Describe Kenneth Copeland, who, as far as I'm concerned, he's a wolf. And I felt kind of disappointing because you just won't call him out.
Got it.
Even though you describe him. Go ahead.
Yeah, okay. First, thank you for calling. Thank you. All right. I deeply appreciate it. And of course, the spirit in which you're doing it as well. But thank you for doing this because you are one of a thousand, to actually say, hey, I'm disappointed and I want to call you and tell you why. It's a lot easier for someone to just post a nasty comment. So thank you for doing that. Let me respond briefly, and then you can come back. The purpose of the show that I did about Kenneth Copeland was to say, here are the comments he made during this interview. Let's talk about what he said about prosperity. The show was not an overall show about evaluating Kenneth Copeland. However, because Justin Peters had sent me that email with all of those charges, I said, I'm going to read it on the air. And what I said was, if everything he's saying is true, then Kenneth Copeland is a false prophet and a false teacher and misleading people. So I stand behind it. In other words, if everything that Justin Peters put in his email is true, and Justin said he's going to send me the latest DVD where he documents that, okay, fine. And I'm going to do my best to watch it. So if everything he said in that is true, then Kenneth Copeland would be a false teacher and a false prophet. Now, on the other hand, I know people that are solid believers, sound believers, love the Lord, orthodox in doctrine, and they've known Copeland for 30, 40 years. And they said, well, he's a believer. There's some stuff we differ with that he teaches. He's a believer. So I know these people well. They're very solid. They've known Copeland, Kenneth and Gloria Copeland, for all these many years, and they vouch for them, and they vouch for their integrity in the Lord, etc. But say, yeah, we don't agree with some of his teaching here and there. So the deal is, very simply, Ezekiel, that I have not devoted time, and God hasn't laid it on my heart to devote time, to see, okay, does Kenneth Copeland right now teach the heretical doctrine about atonement that I believe he taught years ago? All right? Now, some folks have sent me links recently that said, that looks like he still teaches that. That raises major concerns. So all I could do was say, if this, then this. My goal was not to downplay one thing or another, but I'm not here to satisfy every critic, because every day I'm being asked to call. I'm being asked to call out James White. I'm being asked to call out John MacArthur. I'm being asked to call out Kenneth Copeland, Benny Hinn. It was the whole range. I'm getting asked to call out different people for alleged heresy. So I have to do what I feel the Lord wants me to do. So I may be able to dig in deeper. In other words, if I have the time and the inclination, I'll dig in deeper. And if I come to those conclusions, then I'll say them openly. I'll first try to reach out privately, and then I'll say them openly. So that was the purpose of the show, was to talk about what he had said specifically about preachers having wealth, etc., and to try to make it a teachable moment. So I wasn't saying what Justice Peters was saying was wrong or was right. I was saying, if what he's saying is true, then I agree with him. But I just don't know that it's all true. You're sure that it's true from your investigation, and therefore you want me to speak with more confidence about it. I just haven't done that investigation. That's where I was coming from. I don't know if that helps you or lessens the disappointment. I'm just being candid with you, Ezekiel.
Yeah, well, I mean, I understand what you're saying. Like, Justin Peters, he does his thing, and I understand your ministry and what you're called to, and I don't believe you're called to call out every false teacher that you see. I don't believe God has, you know what I'm saying? But it's just, I don't know, it's so flagrant. Is that the right word? It's just so.
Yes, yes.
And, yeah, because I used to study, and not study, I used to read his books, and I used to spend money. Mm-hmm. I used to spend money thinking I was going to get healed. I used to spend money thinking that God was going to bless me because I sent them money, and I burned those books. I threw them in the trash. It's mm-hmm. like, can you believe that? Me, I was poor, and I was sending them money because I believe that they said that if I bless the prophet, God's going to bless me. If I give them money, God's going to get me a job. If I give them money, I think they're wolves, and I think the Bible is a wolf.
Yeah, and Ezekiel, I'm just jumping in because I'm out of time. But thank you for sharing that.
But
thank you for calling. Thank you for being candid. Thank you for expressing disappointment. I deeply appreciate it and value it. Overall, we've gotten very, very positive responses to the broadcast that we did. But there are others that feel exactly the same way Ezekiel did and are disappointed that I didn't go further. I've just explained why. So I'm not saying Justin Peters was wrong. I'm simply saying, listen, I've never read a Kenneth Copeland book or listened to a whole message of his in more than 30 years that I can remember. But I may dig in deeper in the days ahead. Thank you for calling. And Ezekiel, that was a mature call.